Welcome to hour number two of the program for Friday, February 11th, 2011 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown as we do every Friday at 2. And this week, two of my journalistic colleagues joining me in studio to do the Federal News Countdown. First, I'm pleased to introduce you to Tom Shoup, who is the Executive Editor-in-Chief of Government Executive. Great to see you again, Tom. Nice
Great to
have
to
you on
here,
the show.
Francis.
And my colleague here at the station, Jason Miller, who is Executive Editor of Federal News Radio. You must be exhausted this week.
I'll tell you, I'm ready for the weekend. How about that? It's been a long week.
The big SBA story and the subsequent calls from probably every whistleblower potentially in the federal government. We'll talk about that on the countdown later. We're going to get started right away because there is a ton of federal news to talk about this week, and we'll start, of course, with
number three.
Tom Shoup, your story number three is from NextGov, Aaliyah Sternstein's story, which is headlined, Mismanagement, Cost, and Schedule Problems Plague Immigration System Upgrade, and this is yet another IT system in government that is struggling through the program management and development stages.
Yeah, I wish I could actually say that this wasn't a news story.
Yeah.
But, it's the kind of thing that we see over and over again. In this case, we got some pretty good information about, this program at the Citizenship and Immigration Services, to automate, the immigration paperwork process, essentially, which is another one of these programs that it's becoming clear it's growing in scope and cost and getting behind schedule.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been at this for many years and are up to more than $600 million now spent on it, with not a lot to show for it yet. And some interesting sort of twists about it that we found. That is that it seems clear from the internal documentation that the program is falling behind schedule and is having some significant problems, and also that they obligated the money to the contractor for the program. There were supposed to be milestones met in terms of running pilot projects and reporting to Congress on them before money was obligated, and in fact the money was actually obligated before those reports mm-hmm. to Congress were made, and in one of those pilot tests, the system actually failed.
Here's the disconnect that I saw. When the government awarded a 5-year contract to IBM for transformation in 2008, spending was capped at $491.1 million, but as of January 30th, Homeland Security had spent $631.1 million on the project, including contract costs, government salaries, program management, support contracts, and other details, according to information from the IT dashboard and from CIS officials. But they gave your reporter, Aaliyah, a statement that said they are, quote, not currently overspending the amount originally planned in the contract to date.
Yeah,
that doesn't sound like it adds up to me.
That is one, I have to say, one of my favorite statements we've ever received from a government agency, I think, because I think you have to look at that very carefully. They're not currently overspending the amount originally planned to date. In other words, I believe what they're saying, in essence, is, yes, it was originally $491 million. Now it's going to cost X amount. We haven't yet overspent that
hit
part
the
that
now
we were
number.
Overspent. Right, exactly.
It's a lawyer who wrote that. That's
yes.
what I read it as.
Okay.
If you read it specifically, we are not currently overspent. It's a lawyer who wrote that. And nothing against lawyers, but I think that's where the exactness of the statement is coming from.
Yeah.
You really have to parse that.
Remember, what's interesting, I always find is interesting, is this $631 million number includes government salaries, program management support costs, operational IT infrastructure. My question would be, did that original $491 million contract include all those data, or all of a sudden they're pulling in all this other data and we don't have an apples to apples comparison? I don't know if Aaliyah was able to ask that question to them.
Yeah.
If that's one reason why it went up.
Yeah, and I don't know either if she got into that level of detail about exactly why the costs, have been going up the way they have.
Well, this strikes me as a textbook example of what a tech stat session would be called for.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, go ahead. I was going to say, Richard Spires, the CIO at DHS, has gone through 79 major programs. I would guess that this was one of those 79 major programs and has looked at them and said, okay, are they meeting cost, schedule, performance?
So some of the information we have received is that they're pretty crafty at CIS about avoiding getting sucked into these kinds of reviews. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons this program has gone on the way it has, is that they've been very good at avoiding extra levels of scrutiny.
I have a sense that that will probably not last for too much longer.
I was going to say, I have Richard Speier's email is easy to find. We could just forward it to him. We all could.
The interesting thing I just have to note is that some of the information that we had about the costs and the schedule was on the IT dashboard, and we had links to it in the original version of the story. Mm-hmm. And after the story went public, that information disappeared and those links weren't active anymore.
Oh, convenient.
I'm not saying what
convenient.
Happened, but that was the timing of that.
Wonder what happened
thing,
about so. That. Tom Shoup's story number 3 is from NextGov. The headline is Mismanagement, Cost, and Schedule Problems Plague Immigration System Upgrade. And it's posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We have a link to all the stories that we have on the Federal News Countdown this week. Jason, your story number 3 is found on federalnewsradio.com. The headline is Challenging Obama, House GOP Calls for Deep Cuts. And I think the story here is that throughout the week, the number has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger, and they're back up to the $100 billion that they talked about before the campaign that they said at one time, well, we're not really going to be able to do it. Now that number's back, it seems.
And I think the reason this is just one of the many stories that we've seen throughout the week, and I think two things are happening here. One, you have the let's get in front of the Obama administration before they release their 2012 budget, which is obviously coming out Monday. And the second piece of this is they're working on the continuing resolution that expires obviously March 4th for the government. So it's priming the way to cuts in the CR, which I think would not make it a continuing resolution if they're going to cut programs. I think it becomes more of an omnibus spending package, but that's a whole different, again, lawyers have to get involved in that one. But what I find very interesting is a couple things. Number one is that they want to cut $35 billion out of government. As you said, now it's getting up. It's increasing. 60 federal programs they want to get rid of. Each year, last 2 years, and in the previous administration, has offered programs to cut. They've said, I think Obama administration offered 120 programs in the 2011 budget and 115 or 120 programs in the 2010 budget request. The Bush administration has always offered cuts to programs that they think aren't working or are redundant. And Congress each time has said, well, we kind of like that one. Mm-hmm. Or, well, that's my pet well, not that one, because that could cause some. And it's so difficult to make those changes that it'd be really interesting to see the crosswalk between what the House Republicans are looking at to terminate and what the administration is trying to offer to terminate and see where they come together. Are they one in the same, or do they have some overlap, or are they just in total different directions? And that's going to cause even a bigger problem in the end, because nothing will get done because they can't agree.
Yeah. The only thing that I think might make a difference this time, Jason, is the fact that Hal Rogers, the chairman of the House Appropriations Committee, now announced yesterday his number is $100 billion that he wants to cut out of the CR. And so it seems like everybody, at least on the House side, is on the same page that something will be cut. And Rogers is saying, listen, this is going to affect stuff in my district, and I'm doing it anyway. And so that if you have the chairman of the Appropriations Committee saying I'm willing to cut stuff in my own district, my own constituency, that might be the first domino that allows some other members to run for cover.
That's obviously a very good sign that he's actually admitting, okay, this may affect my district. But remember, they're only one-third of the group that has to come together to make these cuts happen. The Senate at any time could say, no, we don't agree with that. And remember, the Senate's controlled by the Democrats, and obviously the White House is controlled by the Democrats. And that, again, falls into, well, if we don't agree with you, nothing's going to get done. And I think that's why there's a bit of concern around a government shutdown. Again, just going back to the bigger issue of the budget and the continuing resolution, is because if the House tries to stuff things in the continuing resolution, let's talk for instance, cutting federal benefits, let's say pension, or changing from high 3 to high 5 for retirement. And that's just an example. It's not happening, but let's say it's happening.
You're giving people heart attacks.
That's why I'm saying, trying to be clear, it's just an example, not happening that we know of. But then all of a sudden, the administration's looking at it going, okay, well, we can't shut down the government, but we also don't like these other provisions. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's some groundwork being laid, but it's also, there's a lot of things that aren't clear quite yet.
It's one of the most fascinating budget dances that I've seen, just this CR, and we haven't seen anything yet based on what we're going to get on Monday, Tom.
No, right, and I think that we are headed here for an epic showdown. The Gulf is just absolutely huge, and it's not good news for the Republicans that they can't are having real trouble this week even getting their act together just in the House. Mm-hmm. And as you say, that's just the House. That's even if they can somehow coalesce around $100 billion in cuts, which would make sense for them because – you know, if anything,
well, first of all, they promised it during the election. That was issue one.
And they, you know, if you know, it's sort of like the healthcare repeal. They just need to say we did this, you know, and the Senate screwed it up, and the administration messed it up. So, but they're so far apart, you know, that marker and what the administration wants to do. It's a real problem.
The headline is Challenging Obama, House GOP Calls for Deep Cuts. It's found on federalnewsradio.com. It's Jason Miller's story number 3 on the Federal News Countdown this week. That means that story number 2 is on deck from Jason Miller and from Tom Shoup of GovExec. And we'll continue counting them down in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Are you a woman between the ages of 35 and 60 with noticeable fine lines and wrinkles? If you answered yes, we're looking for you. We are currently seeking women to try an instant skin-firming serum called Instant Effect. As part of this opportunity, we will send you a free trial of the product, and you may have the chance to appear in a national advertising campaign. To take advantage of this unique opportunity, please call 1-800-500-0365 in the next 10 minutes. Instant Effect is a breakthrough beauty discovery that tightens skin on contact and takes years off your appearance. Simply smooth the lightweight serum on your wrinkles and fine lines and watch as they disappear from view in less than 90 seconds. If you're interested in seeing how young you can look in as little as 90 seconds risk-free, you must call in the next 10 minutes. Instant Effect is now available at Ulta stores, but for this exclusive free radio offer, you must call 1-800-500-0365. Hurry, when this offer's gone, it's gone. 1-800-500-0365.
A persistent problem facing all government agencies today is disposal of their confidential documents or other sensitive material. The best solution is turning your confidential files into energy. That's right, energy. Get clean and go green with Energy Recovery Operations on Aberdeen Proving Ground in Edgewood, Maryland. Since 1988, Energy Recovery has destroyed all sorts of government confidential records and magnetic media while producing energy. There is complete destruction. Do the green thing. Turn your government confidential records into energy. Go to EnergyRecoveryOnline.com or call 410-679-6200. Your mission is possible. Stop identity theft. Burn your government-sensitive records. Log on to EnergyRecoveryOnline.com or call 410-679-6200. That's EnergyRecoveryOnline.com. This message will self-destruct in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
Hey, it's the Geico Gecko. Now, as a federal employee, you're probably one for a smart presentation, so I've put together some charts and graphs here. There you go. That will help illustrate the money you could save by switching to Geico. First thing you'll notice is that Geico now offers discounts to most federal employees GS 7 or above. Now, this is big news. But that shouldn't come as any surprise from a car insurance company that has been serving government employees since 1936. And as you can see on this graph here, it's probably why we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. Yeah, no, I do actually realise you can't see these, but trust me, they're rather impressive. Especially the 97% customer satisfaction rate. And when you consider it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more, well, all you GS7 employees or above should just contact Geico. Tell them, Mike.
Hey folks, this is Mike Causey, and the Gecko said it best. Most federal employees GS7, the equivalent or above, could get a discount on their car insurance. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabek. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabek Insider this afternoon. Better, faster, cheaper in procurement and acquisition. For the past 3 months, the Coast Guard has been testing a way of collaborating on a procurement. We'll tell you what they're doing, and we'll get a status report on how it's going. And did you know that the government calibrates mercury thermometers? Really? Well, not for long. We'll find out what's changed this afternoon, 3 to 7, on the Dorabek Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. Every week at this time, two experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are most important to people who work for the federal government from the previous week, and rank them in order of from number three to number one, and we count them down on the Federal News Countdown. My experts this week are Federal News Radio's Jason Miller and Tom Shoup from GovExec, and we're up to
number two.
Second most important story of the week, as chosen by Tom Shoup, is from the Washington Post. Ed O'Keefe's story headline, TSA boss says he'd fire security officers who strike. And all the comparisons that I saw all over the media were to President Reagan and the air traffic controllers. Does it seem like a parallel to you? Do you think that's a reasonable comparison?
You know, there's sort of a parallel here. And clearly, TSA Administrator John Pistole got sort of backed into a corner during this hearing on this to say what would happen if TSA officers went on strike, which on some level is kind of a ludicrous hypothetical because it's really not going to happen. I mean, there's just not really a conceivable circumstance in which they would walk off the job. Mm-hmm. Like he said, if it did, they'd get fired just the way the air traffic controllers got fired because mm-hmm. you can't strike. The rules don't allow you
right.
to. So, but outside of that, it's, you know, this was just the latest in sort of a whole set of things happening at TSA, and a bunch of things are coming to a head in terms of unionization and collective bargaining at TSA. TSA has been dragging its feet really ever since the agency was created on whether or not it would allow collective bargaining. The Bush administration clearly didn't want it, and they sort of strung it out, and the Obama administration has strung it out for a couple of years, making a decision on it. But they recently did and said, we're going to allow it. There's now going to be a union election to decide which of the unions is going to represent them. And now we've got the counter reaction coming on the Hill. There's already legislation to say we don't want to allow collective bargaining. On the Senate side, they're trying to sort of come halfway and say we'll give you certain workplace protections that other federal employees get, but not allow collective bargaining. So things are all sort of coming together at once on this issue.
Jason, you and I listened to parts of this hearing in the newsroom when it was happening. It seemed to me that Mr. Pistole was almost pushed into this by one of the members of Congress, and I don't remember
Mo
who
Brooks
was the questioner.
From Alabama, right.
It wasn't something that he was eager to say in front of this committee.
I think a couple things were going on. I think he felt like he answered the question the first time,
right,
which was, if they would go on strike or do a work stoppage, would you fire them? He goes, and I think he felt like he answered it. They can't. It's not in the collective bargaining rights for them to go on strike. So like anybody else, if you, me, Tom, if we decide to stop coming to work, eventually our bosses would say, don't have a job anymore.
That's fine.
That's the way of the world. Yeah. So I think that he felt like he answered the question, but I think Brooks wanted him on the record to say, yes, you'll fire them en masse. And when he finally said it, it was like, you know, he was like, yeah, I'll do it. Just like, enough. I don't know what else to tell you.
Yeah.
I'll do it. You want me to say I'll do it? I'll do it. That's what he said. The interesting thing about the hearing as well is there was a lot of support on the Democratic side. The Democrats supported Pistole in the collective bargaining. And Benny Thompson, the ranking member of the full committee, and he sat in during the subcommittee hearing, said, listen, this is not going to affect security. This is an argument that should not be made. We have Customs and Border Protection. We have Immigration and Customs Enforcement. We have the U.S. Capitol Police. And he goes on and named about four or five other police forces that have collective bargaining rights. He's like, it doesn't affect the situation. It doesn't affect security. Let's move on to something else. And I think that was a fair point, and I think it's an accurate point to point out that what's the fight over TSA? Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't quite understand it.
It's a really tough case to make that there's something about TSA that suggests other than law enforcement agencies, it somehow can't have.
It's so unique, yeah.
Right, collective bargaining. It's fairly clear. It's just a not particularly liking the idea of unions and collective bargaining.
Yeah, it's
in
more
general.
Ideological.
Yeah.
March 9th through April 19th is the window for voting. The choices in the election are NTEU, AFGE, or no union at all. Those are the three choices. That kind of makes it a little bit up for grabs. I mean, I suppose the no union possibility could pull out a plurality. There are all kinds of interesting political small p dynamics here, because this is going to turn into a real heavy campaign.
Lobbying campaign between the two unions.
Yeah.
I think it's already there in many ways.
Oh, yeah.
Well, and I'm sure there are representatives inside the workforce that don't want to unionize.
That agree with the other piece of that.
Members of Congress. So I can't imagine what that's going to be like to be in that workplace for the next month or
in
so.
In a way, it's sort of, this kind of thing doesn't happen that often anymore. Mm-hmm. AFGE and NTU used to really duke it out over representation of various sets of workers at various agencies, especially when NTEU was in its sort of growth period and kind of taken on AFGE. But it doesn't happen. I mean, it's not like every day that agencies are created anymore. Mm-hmm. So it hasn't happened in a while, and they are really going at each other for...
The only one I remember that even discussed the union was GAO. Didn't they look at unionization at one point a couple years ago?
They did.
Yeah,
and nothing ever came from it. I don't know if they never voted or...
I think they did.
No, part of their workforce has unionized.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
It's IFPTE, I think.
I'm not sure which organization, but some of their employees have unionized. Gene Dodaro mentioned that when he was on the show with
me. That's the last one. That's the argument, if you will, the last debate that I remember, union versus no union.
Yeah.
Ed O'Keefe's story, TSA boss says he'd fire security officers whose strike, is Tom Shoup's story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Jason Miller's story number two is, coincidentally enough, by Jason Miller. And we'll hear about that when In-Depth continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
North Korea has the capability to produce nuclear weapons, but is unlikely to use them, and yes, the Pyongyang government is close to defeat. Director of National Intelligence James Clapper made that pronouncement yesterday. In prepared testimony, he said North Korea is a serious threat to security in East Asia, and he believes it may well have built other uranium enrichment facilities beyond the Yongbyon nuclear complex. I'm J.J. Green.
If you've ever stumbled in the dark, did you ever stop to think how difficult it is for our military to see what they need to see and nothing else during night warfare? Airink has. Airink provides design solutions for night vision devices, helmet-mounted displays, and laser eye protection, just to name a few. They help all branches of our armed forces to see better, fly and land faster, and most importantly, more safely. Airink helps today's military forces become ready for tonight's warfare challenges. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
Scientists at the Department of Energy's Ames Research Lab have been able to customize the performance of magnets by strategically replacing key atoms within the material of the magnet. It's a process similar to what bioengineers use when they add or delete genes to create synthetic organisms. A group of researchers successfully replaced key atoms in a magnetic compound with atoms of lutetium and lanthanum. Researchers say the discovery may eventually help as scientists search for new exotic substances for use in high-tech products used today and for those in the future. Researchers say knowing how to identify key atomic positions is similar to understanding the role specific genes play in an organism's DNA. That knowledge could ultimately lead to materials made by design.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
Profile America, Friday, February 11th. Among his many achievements, Benjamin Franklin played a leading role in the founding of America's first hospital. Together with Dr. Thomas Bond, he obtained a charter for a hospital to serve the poor, sick, and insane in Philadelphia. A Philadelphia hospital opened on this date in 1752 in a converted house. Its first special building was finished 4 years later at a location where a modern medical complex still serves the city. During its long history, the hospital's doctors have made advances in many fields, becoming known as the father of both American psychiatry and also of surgery. Today, there are more than 5,800 hospitals in the U.S., and some 650,000 Americans are in these facilities on an average day. You can find these and more facts about America from the U.S. Census Bureau online at census.gov.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown. And on the countdown this week, Tom Shoup of GovExec, it's Friday, you know, that's the only excuse that I have is that I can't speak straight. And Federal News Radio's Jason Miller, our executive editor, and your story number two, Jason, is your series on the Small Business Administration and problems there, and you found a lot of problems there in this investigative series.
Well, this was a four-part series, took about 9 months to go through, and basically it tells the story of four SBA employees who claim whistleblower retaliation for pointing out what they're calling allegations of mismanagement and misconduct, ranging from allegedly human resources fraud, allegedly contracting fraud, and really it's as we were talking kind of offline, jumping into the whistleblower sea is a tough thing to do. And what attracted me to this story specifically was the fact that these people, these SBA employees, tried to do the right thing. They tried to go through the appropriate steps to have their issues and concerns addressed. They talked to current and past SBA administrators and other senior officials. They filed complaints with Office of Special Counsel. They filed complaints with the EEOC, Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. They went to the Inspector General. And really, they came to me as a last resort. They basically said, you know, we got nothing else to lose here. We're frustrated. We want a better place to work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I said, I worked on this for 9 months. I did a lot of research, put it all together, and it came together this week. And I'll tell you that the outpouring of emails and phone calls from SBA, current SBA employees, other employees from around government has just been pretty intense. I mean, I was kind of surprised, I guess, a little bit, the way people came out and said, oh, if you think their story is bad, you should listen to my story. Or, hey, thank you for pointing out these problems. SBA has a long history of these problems. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my point is not, I have nothing against the Small Business Administration personally. It's just that any agency that, you know, agencies have a obligation to, if they have management issues or even personnel issues, to treat the employees fairly.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, there's always going to be conflicts, but instead of what these employees say are retaliation or, you know, feeling like their complaints are being falling on deaf ears, mm-hmm. they have an obligation to do something about it and try to fix the problems. And from what I'm hearing from not just these employees but others, those problems are not being fixed or not being fixed as quickly as maybe they should be.
When you look at material like this, Tom, from a journalist's perspective, if you're the federal employee, it's easy to say or to think about someone in the media, well, if they just tell my story, this attention would get called to this. It's not as simple as just sitting down with someone, hearing their story, and saying, yeah, we should report right on that. Talk about what goes on when you're in Jason's shoes and you're trying to sort through all of this and figure out what's really right and what might be somebody's perception of the way things actually
right
are.
Well, first, I have to applaud Jason for spending the months and months he spent doing this. And as a competitor of his, I would like to say, please stop. but it is a very difficult thing to sort out. It is, I think, having spent more than 20 years covering federal government, the hardest thing from the outside to do is to separate genuine whistleblower stories from those that are people that are really just disaffected employees. So it requires a lot of work, and often these are very complicated issues, and people, even when they have a really fair point to make, you are only hearing their side of it, and there may be things you don't know about that you have to look into, and you have to give, you know, and agent, it put agencies, I have a certain amount of sympathy for agencies because, you know, they get put in this position of, you know, you give them an opportunity to respond, and they invariably say, we can't respond because it's a personnel matter and there's privacy issues, which is partly a dodge, but partly not. Mm-hmm. Partly they're in the tough position of saying, you know, we can't just go out and make a case against an employee in the middle of a proceeding.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of the reason that's part of the reaction I did get from SBA, part of it was saying, listen, we can't discuss specifics, but they did talk about the fact that they are trying to strengthen oversight and management, that they are doing more around training, and they, you know, have looked into certain evidences, looked at the evidence of certain allegations of contract fraud or what some people are calling contract abuse. And I appreciate the fact that they did reach out and offer some emailed comments. I would have liked to have gotten the administrator on the record, obviously. It would have been nice to hear, you know, how serious she's taking this, because with email responses, you just don't know, is it, as you get, again, lip service, just because we have to get something out there, or is this a very, is the administrator saying to her colleagues, wow, I didn't realize it was this bad, or wow, I didn't realize that these people are being treated like this, we have to put the hammer down and stop it and figure out what's going on here, whether it's a one case or is it systemic, I don't know, but at least you get that emotion from the speaker versus emailed comments, which are dry and emotionless.
You've done stories like this before, Jason. You've worked on stories like this, Tom, and had reporters who have done stories like this. Do we ever get a sense of what happens when somebody circles back to revisit this months, years from now? Do we ever get a sense of closure? Or because of the nature of the structure of the agencies, is this kind of held closely within these agencies, and we don't know whatever happens to, for example, these four people?
Well, there is a tendency to very much for there to be a sort of circle the wagons approach on these kind of things. You know, it's hard to tell how pervasive whistleblower retaliation is in government, but I would say it's pretty clear, number one, it's not rare, and this kind of response of looking at mismanagement and saying, we've got to cover this up, we've got to keep this internal, we've got to make sure the Hill doesn't become involved, we have to do whatever, we'll move people around if we have to, that is, I think it's becoming pretty clear, more common than it really ought to be in government.
And from my experiences, I'll tell you that I think when something happens, you know about it. Mm-hmm. If someone loses their job, if someone gets moved out, if someone resigns, you'll know about it. And if there's hearings, you'll know about it. Mm-hmm. So if the Hill gets involved, and in this case or any other case, if they call up the administrator or whomever, or the director or the secretary to the Hill and say, you're going to answer questions about this subject, you know about it. The big question is, and that's, you know, what happens next? What mm-hmm. happens in the short term? What happens in the long term? I mean, look, the National Park Police, Teresa Chambers, took 7 years to settle a whistleblower problem. Well, 7 years is a long time.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
that's the type of thing you end up hearing. And then there's also, you know, not in this case, but in other cases where you have lawsuits. And for instance, like the contracting whistleblowers, you see a press release from the Justice Department that says so-and-so has agreed to pay $46 million to settle whistleblower complaints. And that person who blew the whistle gets a nice little cut of that $46
million. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Jason Miller's story on the situation at the Small Business Administration is his story number two on the Federal News Countdown this week. And you can find it linked up right now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We're up to story number one for Jason Miller and for Tom Shoup of GovExec, and we'll cover those in just moments on the Federal News Countdown on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
NBC News Radio, I'm Tom Costello. As protesters in the streets of Egypt celebrate the resignation of President Hosni Mubarak, the Obama administration hails the change. Here's the Vice President, Joe Biden.
This is a pivotal moment in history. It's a pivotal moment in not only Mideast history, but in history, I would argue.
Mubarak handed control of the country over to the military, which has fired the parliament and vowed to guide the country to greater democracy. In other news, the man convicted of killing Washington intern Chandra Levy nearly a decade ago has been sentenced to 60 years in prison. A jury convicted Igmar Gwandike of first-degree murder and Levy's 2001 disappearance and death. The World Health Organization says governments should do more to clamp down on alcohol abuse, saying alcoholism is killing 2.5 million people each year. The UN group says almost 1 in 10 people between the ages of 15 and 29, 1 in 10, die from alcohol-related causes. More news at MSNBC.com. I'm Tom Costello, NBC News Radio.
Hello?
Hey, honey, it's me. I'm calling you from Walgreens.
Okay.
They have a ton of great stuff for Valentine's Day, but I couldn't decide.
So, you called me?
Yeah, I already grabbed some of those Hershey's Kisses chocolate you love, and I was gonna... Oh, whoa! What perfume do you like?
I'd really rather you choose my...
Ooh, Ferrero Rocher chocolates. Delicious.
Matt?
Walgreens has fresh flowers? You are gonna be so surprised.
No, I won't.
Gifts from the heart without the hassle. Walgreens. There's a way to share the love.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Is trying to sneak out of a really boring meeting wearing tap shoes a bad idea?
Sales growth has increased 2.9%. That's a reflection of aggressive... Ben, where are you going?
Nowhere. Headed back to my seat now.
Switch to GEICO now and you could save hundreds on your car insurance. For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Hey Eagles fans, tickets to all American University men's and women's basketball home games in Bender Arena are on sale now. Get them online 24/7 at AUEagles.com or by calling the Athletics Ticket Office at 202-885-TIXX. That's 202-885-TIX. Make your plans now to be part of another historic season in Bender Arena.
Catch the Eagles' next home game Sunday, February 20th versus rival Holy Cross at 2 p.m.
A persistent problem facing all government agencies today is disposal of their confidential documents or other sensitive material. The best solution is turning your confidential files into energy. That's right, energy. Get clean and go green with Energy Recovery Operations on Aberdeen Proving Ground in Edgewood, Maryland. Since 1988, Energy Recovery has destroyed all sorts of government confidential records and magnetic media while producing energy. There is complete destruction. Do the green thing. Turn your government confidential records into energy. Go to energyrecoveryonline.com or call 410-679-6200. Your mission is possible. Stop identity theft. Burn your government-sensitive records. Log on to energyrecoveryonline.com or call 410-679-6200. That's energyrecoveryonline.com. This message will self-destruct in 3 seconds. 3, 2, 1.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris, weekday mornings 6 to 10.
Defense Contract Audit Agency Director Patrick Fitzgerald.
In 1990, we had one employee for every $19 million of procurement funds. At the start of 2010, we have one employee for $49 million of procurement funds. We have brought on about 500 auditors over the last 2 years to address this formidable workload that we have.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
You're listening to the Federal News Countdown on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My experts counting down the most important federal news stories of the week as chosen by them. Our Federal News Radio's Jason Miller and Tom Shoup of GovExec, and we're up to...
Number one!
The most important federal news story of the week as selected by Tom Shoup is a National Journal story headlined, Tea Partier Wants to Scrap Energy Department. An entire agency, the Energy Department, proposed to be eliminated by Senator Rand Paul, a new senator from Kentucky. This is not the first time, Tom, that we've heard of a member of Congress wanting to eliminate an entire agency. So what is it about this particular effort that made you kind of raised your eyebrows?
Yeah, I think this is just a great emblematic story of the budget battle that's currently underway.
Mm-hmm.
This is a conservative thing to do. A marker they like to put down is let's start getting rid of entire agencies. And so Rand Paul, who's really leading the charge here on the budget cutting end of the spectrum, I mean, he has laid out $500 billion in cuts. It's not chump change. But what's interesting about it to me is it's one of those stories where you start to once you start to break it down, I mean, the starting point is energy department. Why do we need the energy department? Let's get the government out of the business of subsidizing energy research, and we don't need that. Well, then you start to look at it. 60% of the energy department's budget goes to the National Nuclear Security Administration. Huge portion of what they do is manage the nuclear weapons stockpile. Mm-hmm. Nobody, Rand Paul included, is saying, let's stop managing the nuclear weapons stockpile.
Mm-hmm.
So he's saying, let's transfer that over to defense. Well, you got a whole other set of issues when you do that. But looking at the rest of the budget, 25% goes to the national laboratories for this kind of serious research that they do.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's willing to contemplate not doing that. I think not many other people are. I mean, you're talking about Los Alamos, Lawrence Livermore. These are sort of crown jewels of the federal government, and simply abolishing them doesn't seem like it's in the cards. And then you get down to energy research, renewable energy. Then you're talking about 10% or so of the energy department budget. And that's just not... You're not going to have huge cost savings doing that, and mm-hmm. you're going to introduce a lot of other potential issues. For instance, with the nuclear security stuff, there's a reason why the Defense Department is not responsible for managing the nuclear weapons stockpile, because mm-hmm. it was thought at the time, once we started creating nuclear weapons, that was a bad idea to have total military control of the nuclear weapons complex.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a deliberate choice to move that away, and it's a very serious thing to do to say, well, we're going to just turn our back on 40, 50 years of that and go in a different direction.
It would be interesting to look at those kinds of things, though, structurally, because the nuclear weapons stockpile was developed in the 40s and 50s, and the Energy Department didn't exist till the late 70s. And so I guess it would take a little research to determine who managed them.
Right, but I think it was always under civilian control.
Yes, you're correct about that. That's exactly right.
And it was folded into the Energy Department.
Seeing how that looked structurally before the Energy Department, I think would be interesting.
And I was going to say that going back to Lawrence Livermore and the National Labs, as well as energy research, I mean, if you look at what the Obama administration's goals are, just the whole competitiveness, get America competitive again, put money in innovation. I mean, that's where all that comes from. And if the government is not sponsoring it and you're saying, well, that's something that the private sector should be doing, there's an argument for and against that. But knowing where this administration stands, they're not going to stand up or they're not going to sit down for losing a big chunk of that innovation, that research, that R&D. You know, but I would agree with you that this is emblematic of the bigger issue. I mean, you've heard this before where the Congress wants to get rid of the Education Department or SBA,
right,
or name several other agencies that they have said, let's, you know, all we should be doing is defense and, you know, Veterans Affairs. I mean, that's all some people want.
Mm.
So, but yeah, I mean, this is going to be one of the debates that we're going to see time and again, not just energy, but
right, and
whole
that goal,
agencies.
And this one in particular is just huge,
mm-hmm.
because you've got Rand Paul on the one side saying, just let's get out of the business of doing this, and President Obama on the other saying, this is exactly where we need to be putting more and more money. I mean,
mm-hmm.
something has got to give in this.
The headline is Tea Partier Wants to Scrap Energy Department. It's Coral Davenport's story in the National Journal. It's Tom Shoup's choice for the most important federal news story of the week for the reasons you just heard. And a reminder that not only are all the stories posted on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth that we're counting down with Tom Shoup and with Jason Miller, but later this afternoon we'll have our conversations about them posted as well at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Jason Miller's story number one in the countdown's next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Sanjay Sardar is the deputy CIO at the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. He says he wants to merge mobile computing and data analysis to make it easier for agency officials to make decisions.
My holy grail for this is that accessible anywhere concept. You know, it really doesn't matter, one, what device you're using, where you are, as long as you can get access to that data in the nuggets that you need it. Will that mean building data warehouses? Potentially, yes. Say, hey, we're going to use SAS to do some of our modeling. Of course.
CIOs and IT directors, is your network-attached storage infrastructure out of control? Do you have dozens and dozens of NAS appliances that are difficult to administer? Ask the experts at Vion Corporation how Hitachi's high-performance NAS, powered by BlueArc, can consolidate your NAS infrastructure, reduce your number of NAS appliances, and improve your NAS performance. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
Mortgages should be illegal because you're getting robbed every month. For example, if you have a typical $200,000 30-year mortgage, you're going to end up paying over $400,000 after interest. That's almost a quarter of $1 million that you could be putting into your pocket instead of the bank's. I want to send you a powerful free CD to show you how. Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. My proven system can eliminate your mortgage and all your other debts using just the money you already make. That's right. No credit card debt, no car payment, no mortgage. It's easy. It works.
I will be able to pay off my house in approximately 2.5 years on a 30-year mortgage.
Stop getting robbed of your money and your future. Call now and I'll rush you a free CD today. Call 1-800-500-2884. For your free CD, call 1-800-500-2884. 1-800-500-2884.
Become an extraordinary leader through the Key Executive Leadership Masters of Public Administration program at American University. Taught by faculty at the top-ranked School of Public Affairs, the Key MPA program is designed for working professionals and offers weekend classes to fit your schedule. Learn more at an information session on March 1st. To RSVP, visit spa.american.edu/key.
Plan now to attend a firm's February luncheon for an in-depth look at federal cybersecurity mandates. Learn from government leaders how to safeguard our country and protect the privacy of our citizens. That's Thursday, February 17th at 11:30 a.m. at the George Washington University Marvin Center in Washington, D.C. Register today at www.affirm.org.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Every Friday in the 2 o'clock hour, we bring you the Federal News Countdown, where experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are the three most important for that week. And my experts this week, Tom Shoup from GovExec and Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller. And Jason, your story number one is from federalnewsradio.com, headline, GSA tries slamming through FAR fixes. Kathleen Turco, the Associate Administrator of the Office of Government-Wide Policy at GSA, was on the morning show talking about this. What do you think so interesting or unique about this?
Well, the idea of the SLAM, which is obviously bringing people together in a room and solving a problem, is a fascinating attempt by government to really take some private sector best practices and get something done quickly, not just, okay, well, we'll look at it, and then we'll look at it again, and then we'll look at it a third time, and then maybe we'll come up with something. There's what can we get done in the short term? And the Federal Acquisition Regulation, you know, whoever wrote it, I'll give them full credit. Whoever reads it, I'll call them an insomniac, and whoever understands it, I'll call them a brainiac. But it's a complicated thing. It's hard to understand. And by trying to make it simple, trying to address some of the either things that aren't quite clear or are repetitive or don't make sense anymore, I think that's a very healthy thing to do. And that's why I think it's a great story. It's a great example of the government, and they don't get enough credit for this, looking at a problem and actually trying to solve it in the short term versus something that's going to take years and years and years.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the idea of trying to use things like this, tools like this, Tom, to get people to do things that maybe they haven't considered doing before? I mean, have you ever seen a copy of the FAR? I'm sure you have.
Yeah, that I have to say is my first reaction, that if some poor group of people got locked in a room and told they couldn't leave until they fixed the FAR, I mean, I hope they were going to slip them food because they could be there a long time.
Yeah.
But it is, I mean, all kidding aside, that, you know, to that kind of approach, and I know Martha Johnson, when we interviewed her months ago, she was sort of touting this as something she really liked to do as a problem solving technique. And I think you see more and more of that sort of innovative things coming into government and trying to take approaches that say, let's deal with this head on. And let's not just say, we'll string it out, we'll have a task force, we'll go on for months and months and months, and we may or may not ever do anything.
Mm-hmm. The whole idea of this, I think, was interesting. If you didn't hear the conversation with Kathleen Turco, you can find it at federalnewsradio.com. It's archived there on the Federal Drive page. The whole idea just of tackling the FAR, I mean, Dan Gordon has talked about this a number of times, with the Mythbusters memo in particular, trying to get people to understand the things that you don't think you understand or that you think aren't clear, they're in there. and trying to generate this stuff and really make some changes as far as what's going on in the contracting community.
And I think part of the goal of the SLAM was to bring those out.
Mm-hmm.
What don't people get? What do we have trouble understanding? How can we simplify it and make it easier so people can use what's already in the FAR? And you're right. If you look at the myth-busting memo that Dan Gordon from OFPP put out earlier in the week, last week, a lot of it dealt with, hey, here's a myth, and here's what the FAR says. Here's a myth, here's what that FAR actually says. And it's that kind of simplicity that I think people want, mm-hmm. especially with a document, you know, with all due respect, like the Federal Acquisition Regulations, it's just not an easy document.
9,478 pages. I'm exaggerating.
Oh, right.
But it's not
did
really
that
long.
Did you just make that up?
I pulled that number right out of my head.
That's very impressive.
Well, you know, I have to have some kind of talent in order to be able to keep this job.
I think
job.
You might have hit the low side of that.
Well, the interesting thing real quick about the SLAM also is that this is something that GSA is doing with several things. I mean, they've done it around IT when they had their big IT modernization project. That got slammed. I think they slammed the public affairs office.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a bad thing. But it's a way to, again, I think as you said, address the issues head on and make a difference and make changes now, not later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The changes that are being made like this, Tom, do you think long term we'll be able to look back 4 or 5 years from now and say, not necessarily just the slamming concept, but different kinds of innovative things like this and really see some results? Or is this something that you think is neat now and who knows what will happen?
I think it's going to be always a hit and miss type of thing in the federal context. I mean, I think certain things they'll be able to really tackle head on and fix. And many of the things, you know, of that nature, people may not even recognize mm-hmm. or see that they've been fixed, which mm-hmm. is sort of the tough thing about government, too, is sometimes things really do get handled well and really do get improved. And the upshot of that is nobody really notices how much better things are. Mm-hmm. They just don't notice that they're getting
worse. That's one of the biggest complaints I think Chris Dorbeck will talk about, you know, about how the government never tells the good news story enough.
Mm-hmm.
They hide from the bad news story, and the good news story is too oftentimes too big. Political because it's an administration priority of some sort. But this type of thing, when they come out with the changes to the FAR to make it easier, that story, as reporters, we end up, oh, I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. Really? Tell me right. more. And then that's how you find it kind of by accident versus they actually reaching out.
Right.
Jason, your story number one this week is GSA tries slamming through FAR fixes. It's posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, as are all of our stories from this week's Federal News Countdown, which was a great one. Thank you, both of you gentlemen. Tom Shoup from GovExec, Jason Miller from Federal News Radio. Chris Dorbeck is up next with the Friday Dorbeck Insider, and I'm back on Monday at 1 with a brand new In-Depth with Francis Rose.